The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Well, we welcome you to NFL Live right now. Dan Orlovsky vibing with the music right there. And Ryan Clark and Mina Kimes here. Adam Schefter will be joining us momentarily. And, of course, a report from Tampa Bay just ahead of tonight's game is coming your way in minutes. But we get you to some breaking news right now. And this one, gut-wrenching, for lack of a better way to put it. Bengals rookie quarterback Joe Burrow, number one overall pick, has a torn ACL, MCL, and other structural issues in his knee, according to ESPN's Ben Baby and Adam Schefter. More damage than was initially anticipated, and heartbreaking for those who have loved watching him play this year. Here's his coach, Zach Taylor, with more.
He's been in great spirits on the bus, on the plane, you know, in the facility today. He's responded as well as he could possibly do it, and we've all noticed that. He was a tremendous leader for us, and he gave us a lot of energy the way that he led the unit. And so, you know, I can't be a robot coach and say that we're not going to be missing that, because we will. I'm expecting to make a full recovery and ready for the 2021 season.
It's important to note that Taylor would not clarify whether he meant the start of the 2021 season or just at some point during the season. We bring in Adam Schefter now. What more do we know, Adam, about the injury at this point?
Well, this was a worst-case scenario, Laura, for the Cincinnati Bengals, Joe Burrow, and the National Football League. Basically, he tore his ACL, he tore his MCL, he did suffer other damage to that knee that I do believe includes his PCL and the meniscus in his knee. He's going to undergo reconstructive knee surgery, and the general timeline for injuries of this sort are 9 to 12 months. So just do the math. Now, again, everybody's different. Everybody heals differently and recovers from surgery differently and rehabs differently. But a best-case scenario for Joe Burrow, best case, would be 9 months. So do the math. More likely, it's going to be longer than that, and the Bengals are going to have to be very careful with Joe Burrow moving forward. At the very least, Joe Burrow's status for the 2021 season, the start of that season, is absolutely in question, and we'll see when he can make it back during the season next year. But this was the worst case scenario for the Cincinnati Bengals. The MRI came back worse than what was anticipated.
Just so tough to hear. More from Adam Schefter throughout this show. And we will have Stefania Bell joining us as well for more of a medical update on this. But Dan, you're cringing even as Schefty was delivering that news. What ran through your mind when you saw this?
It's gut-wrenching. You feel terrible. It makes me feel the same way I felt when I saw Dak Prescott get hurt. Like, you're just at a loss for words, and your thoughts and prayers go out to him. But then you just hope that Joe Burrow can get back healthy, but my brain immediately goes to 2022. It doesn't go to 2021. Like, yes, technically, maybe he'll be able to come back and play next season. But what kind of shape is he going to be in, or how healthy is he going to play at that level, or be able to play at level? And then also, one of the things that makes Joe Burrow special is the instincts, is the reaction, is the athlete that he actually is, especially in that small space that he plays in. How is that going to impact that? Like, how is this injury going to impact his superpower, which is those instincts and reactions? And so it's awful. I feel terrible. Just hope and pray that he can come back to full strength.
You know, covering him extensively in college and his journey even to become the starter at LSU, and, of course, in that remarkable season, one thing remained the same for Burrow throughout all of that, and it was the toughness, the grit, the desire to compete. That will be applied to his rehab. I think you could look at this as, obviously, they got to make sure he's completely healthy, but the sooner, probably more than the later, for him coming back, he'll be so motivated to get back. All right, let's get back to Sunday Night Football, a showdown between the Raiders and Chiefs that came down to the wire. Dan Orlovsky, a rematch, of course, from Week 5, and the Raiders got the better of the Chiefs that time. But let's pick it up in the fourth, about 6 minutes left. First and goal there in Mahomes to Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, this is a great job by that offense, capturing the perimeter, getting out to Le'Veon Bell in space, and he finds the end zone touchdown, Chiefs.
The Chiefs would regain the lead there later in the fourth, a little over 2 minutes left to play. First and goal. Jason Witten caused the false start penalty.
Come on, Witt, you know better than that, but this is a great job of continuing to play for Derek Carr. scramble. Witten goes to the back pylon. He sees it the same way as Carr and goes, you know what, I got to come back to the quarterback towards that front pylon. Touchdown, Raiders.
He redeems himself. The Raiders with the lead. A minute 43 to play. Chiefs down by three there. And Mahomes to Mecole Hardman, a gain of 16 yards. That's first down. Next play, Mahomes to Kelce.
And it's a good job of seeing that safety hang high to his left and finding the soft spot to Kelce in the middle of the field.
Just 34 seconds left. What would happen here for Mahomes once again to Kelce?
We know what's going to happen. We know that Patrick Mahomes is going to find somebody weapon-wise on that offense to create that touchdown for the Chiefs. It's an awesome job of him moving, keeping his eyes downfield, and finding Kelce in the middle of that end zone.
What a final 2 minutes of that game. Chiefs go on to win it 35-31, and Patrick Mahomes was unbelievable. But how about what he's done in the fourth quarter and overtimes this season, completing over 70% of his passes for over 8 yards an attempt, 10 touchdowns, a QBR of 96.4. That's the second highest QBR through 10 games over the last 15 seasons, trailing only Tom Brady's mark in 2007, just ahead of Tim Tebow's legendary run in 2011. So, Dan, the thing is, the Raiders almost did enough to shut down Mahomes and beat the Chiefs for the second time. Why did they come up short? Where exactly did they fall
short?
Well,
they've got the perfect formula, right? But like Brandy said, almost doesn't count. And it
came
down to a fourth down play and really that touchdown from Patrick Mahomes to Kelce that wins the game for them. As well as the Raiders played, it wasn't good enough because they've got number 15, Patrick Mahomes, and Andy Reid dialing it up. And that's the difference between that football team and everybody else. No matter how good the Raiders can play and know how well they can operate their formula, it wasn't going to be enough.
I'm just wondering, like, if anyone had placed a bet on the first person on NFL Live to quote Brandy, who would have picked Dan Orlovsky out of us? Look, I want to be clear about something. Patrick Mahomes, like, we shouldn't take him for granted. He's approaching that LeBron territory where we're so used to his excellence, we're kind of not impressed by it anymore, or we don't talk about it enough. Patrick Mahomes is incredible. The Chiefs won that game. But America knew that. I think what a lot of America didn't know is how well Derek Carr has been playing. He has been better this season than he was back in 2016 when he was being talked about as an MVP candidate before he got hurt for a couple of reasons. One, he is airing the ball out. He is taking risks downfield, which is something that Raiders fans have been desperate for him to do. The other thing that jumps out to me, Ryan, is that he's been making plays out of structure. You saw that right here on the Witten touchdown. He was scrambling around back there, using his feet, keeping the play alive. This is a new Derek Carr, and it is why this Raiders offense is one of the scariest in the NFL. The defense isn't quite there, but the offense is good enough to make this a playoff contender.
Yeah, Ryan, let's continue on that same trend there. Why have the Raiders given the Chiefs such a hard time now in their two matchups this year?
Well, listen, when you face unique excellence, you try to figure out a way to beat it. And if you're in the AFC West, you understand that the Kansas City Chiefs come to town and that they are going to score points. So what do? You figure out ways to score points. But most teams are like, we're going to stop them. The Raiders say we can win a shootout. They won a shootout in Kansas City early on in the season. And you saw last night that the Kansas City Chiefs really couldn't stop the Las Vegas Raiders. The only mistake this offense made was scoring a little bit too early and giving Patrick Mahomes the football back. I said early on in the season, I like the Pittsburgh Steelers in a playoff game against the Kansas City Chiefs, not necessarily to beat them, but to compete because they would have a quarterback that wouldn't be scared to look across the field and see Patrick Mahomes. You know who else isn't scared? Derek Carr. When Derek Carr looks across that field and then he looks down his sideline, he says, I got the dudes on this side and I'm that dude too. And he went toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes two times this year and he's looked magnificent doing it. This team is built to win a shootout. Going to be fun to see what happens down the stretch.
There's something, Dan, that you saw in the fourth quarter of this game that really stuck out to you. What was it?
Well, go to the fourth and two play because it ends up being a huge play in this game, and they get into that bunch that the Raiders are going to all-out pressure them. They're going to take the inside receiver, Tyreek Hill, and clear out. Now you're playing in and out by those two secondary players. The outside guy has to take the inside breaking receiver. You get that inside safety to just take a couple steps wide. Mahomes drifts against that pressure. Huge first down. That's a huge conversion with fourth quarter, 8:30 to go. And then go to the touchdown play. Jonathan Abram, how can we put him in conflict? Tyreek Hill, you go up top, run a go route. Travis Kelce, you run the crossing seam. And this is what I love about Patrick Mahomes. Leave the pocket because you want to, not because you have to. Stare to the right, knowing top of the screen, top left corner. Abram's got to follow. He can't help himself. And you take that safety from that zone, you open it up, and Kelce becomes the winning touchdown. Because Patrick Mahomes can do that stuff. He's the difference maker in that football game.
Yeah, this game featured four lead changes in the fourth quarter alone, including two go-ahead touchdown passes in the final 2 minutes. It was wild.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll see more of that tonight on Monday Night Football. All right, breaking news right now on a couple of fronts. Adam Schefter, what else can you tell us?
Oh, Laura, as is the case on Mondays, news flows in. Panthers running back Christian McCaffrey is considered unlikely to play on Sunday against the Minnesota Vikings, despite the fact that Panthers head coach Matt Rhule considers Christian McCaffrey week-to-week with that shoulder injury. Moments ago, the Bears also placed their standout safety, Eddie Jackson, on the COVID-19 list. So obviously, he's in danger of missing Sunday's game against the Green Bay Packers. And lastly, to bring it full circle, the Bengals officially placed rookie quarterback Joe Burrow on injured reserve.
All the latest news right here on NFL Live. Huge Monday night matchup here on ESPN tonight as the Bucks host the Rams. And for more, let's check in at the Domino's pregame headquarters where Lisa Salters is standing by. Lisa, Tom Brady coming off a 3-touchdown performance last Sunday against the Panthers, but he should have his hands full with Aaron Donald and the Rams. What should we be watching out for?
Laura, the matchup to watch tonight, the number 2-ranked Rams defense trying to corral the GOAT, Tom Brady, who had 341 yards and 4 total touchdowns last week in the win over Carolina. That was Brady's third 300-yard passing game this season, and he's the only quarterback at 43 years old or older to ever hit that 300-yard mark. And keep in mind, Brady has just played in 10 games with his new team and told us this weekend that he doesn't believe the offense is even operating at its highest level just yet. And Rams defensive tackle Aaron Donald and the rest of LA's defense is going to try to keep Tampa's offense from making any progress tonight. Brady and Donald have faced each other just twice in their careers, including Super Bowl 53. And though Donald has yet to sack the GOAT, Brady said about Donald this weekend, there's only one like him, as dominant as anyone who has ever played the position. Laura.
Yeah, Aaron Donald hadn't sacked Nick Foles before this season, and then he did this year. Also, the NFL making some history tonight, assembling the first all-black officiating crew to work Monday Night Football, led by crew chief Jerome Boger. The NFL citing the opportunity to recognize the league's history and recent practices in diversifying its officiating department. Let's bring Adam Schefter back in for some quarterback news around the league, beginning with the Tua Tagovailoa situation in Miami. What more can you tell us, Adam?
Laura, after the game yesterday, Dolphins head coach Brian Flores said he's going to stick with Tua this week against the New York Jets. He went to Ryan Fitzpatrick to try to give the team a spark in the fourth quarter of yesterday's game to see if the Dolphins could rally. It didn't happen, but Tua, according to Flores, will go back to the starting lineup, and Fitzpatrick will return to the bench for the time being. Doug Peterson, Eagles head coach, similar message on Carson Wentz. The Eagles are sticking with him as the starting quarterback. The fact that we're even talking about whether to stick with Carson Wentz as the starting quarterback tells you the problems that exist in Philadelphia right now. But keep in mind, they still are, as hard as this is to believe, in first place. Also today, Bears head coach Matt Nagy said he's not ready to name a starter for Sunday's game against the Green Bay Packers. Nick Foles is coming off an injury, the hip injury. Mitchell Trubisky is coming off the shoulder injury. And lastly, in the last bit of news today, the Ravens running backs, J.K. Dobbins, Mark Ingram, both tested positive for COVID. Both are being placed on the reserve COVID-19 list, and both are out for Thursday night's game at Pittsburgh against the Steelers.
Yeah, those 10-0 Pittsburgh Steelers, not the game where you want to have players out. We'll keep an eye on that for sure. Adam Schefter with us all show long, getting ready for Monday Night Countdown as well right here on ESPN at 6 p.m. The Colts showed their fighting spirit with their comeback win against the Packers yesterday. Mina, what stood out to you?
The play of Phillip Rivers. And the Colts have won a lot of games this year because of their defense, but don't get this wrong. They won this game because of Phillip Rivers. This is the sort of performance they were hoping for when they signed him in free agency. It was a gutty performance. He played through a toe injury and, more importantly, didn't put the ball in harm's way too much at the end. We call him Peanut Butter Rivers around here.
Yeah.
And listen, and for me, it was about the second half of the Green Bay Packers offense. They were bad, real bad. Michael Jackson, and they couldn't get anything started. 2 3-and-outs in the third quarter. They didn't score till late in the game because they didn't get a middle runner in cover two for the Indianapolis Colts. They have to be better. They have to be more creative. And when Aaron Jones is shut down, Aaron Rodgers needs to show up.
Well, let me throw some love to the linebackers for the Colts. Five guys at the line of scrimmage. You only got five in protection for the Packers, right? That defensive end is going to peel on the back. Darius Leonard, watch the burst he has coming through this line of scrimmage. Untouched, gets you off the field on 3rd-and-1. This is my favorite play, though, 4th-and-1. Watch Bobby Okereke. This is teach tape. Don't get picked. Sit on the inside hip of the back and force Aaron Rodgers to make a one-in-a-million, once-in-a-lifetime type of throw. Both those guys make huge plays to get off the field in the second half against that Packers offense.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hey, Saints and Falcons with Taysom Hill under center for New Orleans. And Sean Payton retweeted some bulletin board material from former Falcon wideout Roddy White yesterday. The tweet read, "Saints about to get whipped trying us with Taysom Hill at quarterback. We about to smack them." Didn't happen that way. Anyway, let's show it to you. Taysom Hill making his first career start in the place of injured Drew Brees. They're down there, and Hill showing that, listen, he might be an NFL quarterback, Dan Orlovsky.
This is great movement in the pocket, finding that crosser, and this is one of the better throws of the day because it looks like Sting coming down from the Raptors. That ball is in the air for absolutely ever, but a great job of Emmanuel Sanders making that adjustment and making the catch.
Yeah, Monday Night Football is in Tampa. It almost reminded us of the Tampa Bay Rays in the Trop. All right, Hill still showing off the arm there.
It's a good job of seeing that flat defender fly out of there and hitting the slant, and then this is what they do best. 4th-and-goal, quarterback power, follow the big bodies, touchdown Saints.
Saints up 17-9 there, fourth quarter. Hill not done. 1st-and-goal for the Saints.
And this is kind of the secondary aspect of their game that he loves. You know, no one's open, play action pass. Go be an athlete and create offense for us after the snap.
Yeah, the Saints win 24-9. Hill finished 18-23, 233 pass yards, had 10 carries. You expected that. But, Dan, were you surprised by the scheme they put in place for Hill?
Yeah, I was surprised at, like, how much the offense looked like a we believe that you can play a traditional quarterback style of offense. And the great thing was Sean Payton has been saying this about Taysom Hill, and Taysom Hill just obliged. A lot of play action pass, fake toss. This is a great throw, throwing to space for Michael Thomas crossing the field. I love that they put him under center as much as they did, allowed some hard ball play action passing. You see him climb the pocket, find Michael Thomas. Again, these are pass concepts that we've asked, like, how are they going to create chunk passes in their offense? Who's going to be the person to do it? Well, they did it with the play action pass, and they did it with Taysom Hill. So I love the fact that he believed in him to operate that offense. And like I said, Taysom Hill did a great job looking like a quarterback in 2020 in the NFL.
See, Dan came on here and he gave you all of these technical reasons and showed you scheme and put video up, and you're going to say, oh, that's why Taysom Hill was able to do that. No, we got catfished, y'all. It wasn't Sean Payton. Sean Payton ain't smart. We were catfished. Taysom Hill showed us he was this big brute, this physical kick returner, punt returner, running down on kick team as the R5, a guy that could block, catch R5 passes, run the football. And then he comes out and he could actually play the quarterback position. He looked quite quarterbacky the whole day. He went through his progressions. He made the right reads. He stepped up in the pocket when he needed to. And he didn't just take off running to run. If you're the Atlanta Falcons, there's no way you expected this. Maybe some Lamar stuff, maybe some Colin Kaepernick stuff, but baby Drew Brees, this was new. Taysom Hill was great. He made the throws he needed to make, and when you got a defense playing like that, this is more than enough.
Yeah, if you had told us this was going to happen on Friday, we would all have been like, wait, what? What are you talking about? And Mina, the question is it just a flash in the pan, or is it sustainable for the Saints if Brees is to miss significant time?
Well, I think it depends on your timetable. Is it a long-term solution? We don't know. But is it sustainable in the short term this season? Absolutely. In part because we saw what Dan Orion described, which is Hill can execute an NFL offense. A lot of play action, but he was making NFL-caliber throws at the intermediate level. But more importantly than that, he has the backing of an elite defense.
Wow.
All season long. You guys heard me at the beginning of the season.
For sure.
Touting this Saints defense, and they let me down, and I look stupid. But over the last month, they've made me look smart. In fact, they've been the second best defense in the NFL in terms of yards per play, the best run defense, and man, did they look dominant against Atlanta. I mean, poor Matty Ice felt it. He was sacked 8 times, and it wasn't just pressure. He was holding on to the football. Several of those sacks, he was holding on to it, staying in the field, looking for guys to get open. That Saints secondary was incredible. They were glued onto the Falcons receivers. And regardless of what we get from Hill, this is a Super Bowl caliber defense.
First off, Mina, you never look stupid. It just took you a little while to be right. Because now that this team is playing the way they are on the back end and in the front, they're going to be difficult to beat. And I think the Quan Alexander ad was a huge deal for the New Orleans Saints. They have playmakers on all three levels, and you saw it against the Atlanta Falcons that aren't a bad football team offensively. And so if they continue to play like this, this gives Drew Brees some time to heal. Taysom Hill fills in admirably, and this team's going to be tough to beat in the playoffs.
Yeah, you mentioned it there, Ryan. You just wonder if it gives Drew Brees time to be really fresh by the time they'd really want him back in action. All right, let's bring in Adam Schefter in here. Adam, what way did yesterday's performance shape how the Saints will move forward with their quarterbacks?
Well, Laura, I think that they were always open-minded to the idea that Taysom Hill could be the successor to Drew Brees. And there continues to be a widespread expectation that Drew Brees is in his last season in the NFL. He'll make that decision at the end of the year. They wanted to see Taysom Hill now and for the future as well, because this was a chance to help them win this year and to know what they have for next year. Right now, they don't know that, but they're beginning to know that with Taysom Hill. Also want to add one other note, Laura, that just came in. The Vikings have placed wide receiver Adam Thielen on the reserve COVID-19 list. He becomes the latest player to join that list.
All right. Yeah, thanks for the updates there. And let's get to some more breaking news today. Adam Schefter and Ben Baby telling us that Joe Burrow, the number one overall pick, suffered a torn ACL, MCL, and then further structural damage to his knee in an injury yesterday. Of course, he's out for the season. We'll see exactly how long that timetable looks. We're going to bring in Stefania Bell, medical analyst here for ESPN, for a little more here. And we've heard all of these ways to describe this injury. It sounds real significant, Stefania. So what more can you tell us about exactly what happened to Joe Burrow here?
Laura, it was devastating to see how he took that hit to his knee. Part of the reason there was so much damage is his foot was planted. As he gets hit from the outside at the knee, he's also getting hit on the top of his body, kind of forcing him into a hyperextension, and then you see his knee fold inwards. It's a multi-ligament knee injury, and by definition, these are more complicated. We've heard ACL, MCL, and as you heard Adam Schefter earlier say, potentially PCL and meniscus. When the force goes through the middle and the back of the knee, those are the structures you expect to be injured. But until they get in there and can surgically examine the knee, when they can open it up, that's when the surgeons can fully appreciate the extent of the tissue damage, because there could still be other things that are involved.
Yeah, I realize that each case is so individual to the player, but are there any recent comps, maybe another quarterback who's dealt with something similar?
You're right. They're all individual, and they heal at different rates, and it depends on what they do with the surgery, et cetera. But we always want to look to guys who have come back from complicated injuries that are fairly similar. So you can look at Carson Wentz. Now, his was an ACL-LCL, meaning the outer ligament of the knee, but he was able to come back, and obviously he's still performing in the National Football League. And to take it even a step further, think about Teddy Bridgewater, who dislocated his knee, meaning there was significant damage to a number of structures in his knee. And look at him, starting quarterback for the Carolina Panthers. So, you know, there are success stories. There are a couple of keys here. Number one is you really want a surgeon who's got expertise in multi-ligament knee injuries. Dr. Jim Bradley of the Steelers performed Carson Wentz's surgery, and Dr. Dan Cooper of the Cowboys performed Teddy Bridgewater's. They're very experienced with these type of injuries. And then it's the rehab and making sure you don't go too fast. So you're hearing this timeline and people talking about the start of the season, but the number one priority is to make sure that Joe Mixon is fully recovered and ready to play in a football game before he's back on the field. You don't want to pressure him to come back too soon. And you got to think that based on what we've seen so far in terms of other guys coming back, there's positive there for him.
Yeah, Joe Burrow is a guy that, you know, maybe the patience might be the hardest part for him in trying to keep himself on that schedule that you mentioned. Thanks, Stefania, for that.
Y'all know what time it is. It's Big Man Ballin'. Boom! Get off your feet, bro. Dump him on his head, big fella. No, sir, you cannot pass go. Big Man Touchdown. We got hands too. He's an aminal. Shout out to the double X, triple XL fellas. I remember when I used to do that. You made Big Man Ballin', big dog. We ballin'. To my crew, what up? Y'all know what time it is. It's Big Man Ballin'. Y'all thought because I wasn't gonna be there live today on the show that this segment was not gonna make it to TV? Let's get this thing popping. First, Carlos Dunlap with the rip underneath and the sack for Finito. Finished the game, in the game for the Seattle Seahawks over Kyler Murray. Get him on the ground. The trade paid off. Carlos Dunlap. Big Man Ballin'. Oh yeah, to the next one, my man Fletcher Cox with the bull and sack fumble on Baker Mayfield. That's how you do it, Big Man Ballin'. Fletch, I want to shout you out, man. My bad for not getting you on here earlier, big dog. You've been balling all season long, but I finally wanted to get you one in the rain where it get grimy, where it get dirty. That's what I'm talking about, Fletcher Cox. Just bull your man back into the quarterback, sack fumble, recover the ball. Let's go! And last but not least, I don't know what y'all want me to say. The Saints had 8 sacks. Yeah, I said 8. Not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, but 8 sacks. My man Cam Jordan, my man Trey Hendrickson. Oh, you told us, Nina, the man that jumped up with 9.5 sacks. He's one of the league leaders in sacks in the NFL. But shout out to the Saints as they rip through these 8 sacks. That's a bunch of big men balling. The Swagoo had to get them on here. That defense been showing up. That is how you do it. 8 sacks for the New Orleans Saints. They had to be on Big Man Balling.
Okay, I gotta say, shout out to our staff here because that was a total surprise for all of us.
My day.
We miss you, Marcus Spears. Can't wait till you're back. Ryan, that was your first Big Man Balling.
My guy. Hey, that was absolutely phenomenal. My guy did it from the house. This is why NFL Live's the best show, man. Y'all guys do it the right way. I'm just glad my dog let me sit in for him, but we still got Big Man Balling.
Big Man
Made the day.
Ballin'.
Made the day. We can smile now.
All right, we're all smiling. Let's get to Tua Tagovailoa, who wasn't really smiling in this game yesterday for the Dolphins. Struggled mightily throughout the game. Ends up being benched in the fourth quarter after his 6th sack of the game. Now, Brian Flores had said that it wasn't injury related. Here's more from Flores about the decision.
Tua wasn't injured. We just felt like it was the best move at that point in the game. We had to get in a 2-minute mode, and we just felt like he gave us the best chance to win the game.
Do you leave this game needing to make any wholesale changes at the quarterback position? Do you think Fitz's going to be in line to be a starter, or?
No changes.
Okay, so no changes, according to Brian Flores. Mina, Tua Tagovailoa, the starter moving forward. What did you make of this decision by Brian Flores, though?
I was confused. I continue to be confused because of what he said afterwards, that he was benched for performance. When it happened, Laura, I thought, okay, maybe he's hurt or they're afraid of him getting hurt because of how many times he had been sacked. But to say he was benched for performance implies that there's some doubt in Miami about which quarterback can win you football games. I want you to imagine that Ryan Fitzpatrick went out instead of getting picked at the end. Imagine he won that game. what would the conversation be like in Miami and beyond right now
if
the quarterback that you bet that you brought in your rookie for to replace him outplayed him and won that game? You would be planting the seeds of doubt about your youngster. Now, I love Brian Flores. I think he's a phenomenal coach. We praise him to no end. He is so good. What he has done with that franchise is remarkable. But to me, this was a misstep because I think he has created confusion inside the building.
Man, you gotta lie. I'm just gonna be straight up. I wish he'd lied to me. I'm not one of those people that's like, hey man, always tell the truth. Nah, you ain't gotta tell the truth. You a head coach. Y'all lie all the time. Lie to the media. Say, you know what? I thought he might have been a little banged up. I was gonna protect him. And that's what you say the rest of the week. And you say, hey, Tua, you was banged up, bro. You were hurt. Because what message are you sending? Are you sending a message that if you do get in tough times, if you do need to run the 2 minute and you leave Tua Tagovailoa in, you aren't trying to win the game? Is that what that means now? Because when you're in this situation, Fitzmagic gives you the best chance to win. And dog, he almost did it. Imagine if Justice Simmons doesn't make that play. Yes. Now, Mina and Dan, now we're asking Dan right now, Dan, I want you to draw up why Tua should start, and then I want you to draw up why Ryan should start. If you make the decision to go to Tua, whether it's long-term or short-term, you have to make every decision that follows in that same way. And Brian Flores has seemed to do that up until this point. I don't agree with this decision. I believe it's the wrong decision. And as Mina says, it sends the wrong message. He's actually just lucky that they lost, because had they won, it would be a different conversation.
Yeah, I mean, the unknown is a worse feeling than failure. Like, there's now the reality of, like, what could have happened.
Yeah.
Because, listen, like, I rewatched the game. It wasn't that bad. Like, it was the offensive line getting beat up, but Tua wasn't playing poorly. And now you're sitting there going, maybe he just needed one play. Like, maybe one big throw changes the outcome of that game. And Tua goes on this fourth quarter run, because now there's the reality of Tua in that offense, in organization, not knowing how Tua's going to respond in the fourth quarter, backs up against the wall, and he needs to go make that throw because it's coming again. Mm-hmm. Like, the situation is now going to present itself again, right? Yeah, yeah.
Dan, do you bench Herbert or Joe Burrow in that instance?
I don't think there's any chance that those organizations bench Herbert or Joe Burrow. And so, here's my thing. What happens the next time this situation presents itself? Like, what happens in 2 or 3 weeks? You're in the fourth quarter. Tua's playing okay. Your team's getting beat up, and they're down 10. Does Tua have to sit there on 3rd and 6 and go, uh-oh, I can't be aggressive with the football? You know, like, I don't want to get benched, so I hated it. Brian Flores, you've pressed a lot of the right buttons. After rewatching the tape, I can't agree with this.
Mina, one thing that I thought about, and this may be asking you to read minds, which I'm not trying to ask you to do, even though you probably could, is there any way that Flores felt like he owed something to Fitzpatrick? Remember when the benching happened to Fitzpatrick, he was upset about it, he was pretty public about that. Is that part of this at all?
Mm.
I think what's going on here, and this is not me reading minds, it's just me reading the situation, is you've got a team that is ahead of schedule. Right? Like, they've drafted their rookie quarterback, they completed the tank, they're playing for the long term, but all of a sudden, they're in playoff contention. Right. All of a sudden, we're talking about them on NFL Live, going to Buffalo and winning the division, and all of a sudden, your timelines get mixed up. You know what I'm saying? So Flores, all of a sudden, he's thinking, how do I win this game, when he needs to think simultaneously, how do I do what's best for my rookie quarterback? Those timelines got crossed, and you end up with a bad decision.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because I still think some of it had to do with just protecting Tua. He was sacked on 6 of his 26 dropbacks Sunday. That's the most throughout college or his professional career.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Tom Brady might need to go check them out. But anyway, right now he's getting ready for Monday Night Football. There you see him surveying the field, getting to take on the Rams at home. Of course, he'll have to contend with Aaron Donald. And if Aaron Donald has anything to say about it, he won't be looking that cool and calm and collected during the game. So speaking of that, Brady's had a ton of success with a clean pocket. Aaron Donald, though, looking to mix things up and record his first sack against Brady in tonight's game. And speaking of the Rams' defense, they have ranked second in efficiency behind only the Steelers. But don't count out Tampa Bay's unit either, as they rank third. I'm trying not to say that all the time, though. Our Football Power Index lists this game with the highest pregame matchup quality of all Week 11 games, with the Buccaneers holding a 65% chance to win. All right, RC, what matchup are you watching closely tonight?
Listen, I'm looking to see the GOAT against the best to ever do it, and that's Tom Brady against Aaron Donald. Listen, Aaron Donald puts pressure on everyone, and when he's not getting pressure, he's getting doubled and triple teamed, which has freed up his brothers in the front end of that Los Angeles Rams defense, and they have been hell on quarterbacks. And we saw Tom Brady against Chicago. We saw him against the New Orleans Saints twice. When he gets heated up, he doesn't play well. He isn't a mobile quarterback. He doesn't create. And if they can get pressure on Tom Brady, and now that back end can start to make some plays, this looks good for the Los Angeles Rams. So can you protect Tom Brady? And the Los Angeles Rams, can you get to him with four? That's what I'll be watching for all night, and I think it's going to be a good time for everybody who pays attention.
I get super defensive of RC talking about quarterbacks that aren't mobile, that can't move around. Like tonight, I want to watch this run game offense for the Rams versus this run stopping defense for the Buccaneers. The run defense for the Buccaneers is one of the best in the league. They gave up like 3.3 yards per carry. That's unheard of. And you're talking about a Rams offense, especially on first down, that gets super creative with their run game. It equals big chunks in the run game, but it's also consistency. They're averaging over 5 yards a clip on first down running the football. That breeds success as an offense. Who wins that matchup? That's what I'm looking at. This game is going to come down to first down. If the Buccaneers show out and make this a second and long, third and long game, they're going to win. But if the Rams can continue to keep themselves ahead of the sticks and dictate to that defense for Tampa Bay what they want to do, the Rams will win this game.
You know, I've heard people compare this to the infamous Rams-Chiefs Monday night showdown, and I could think that couldn't be further from the truth, because these are two very good defenses, and they are also very good in ways that make them specifically challenging for these offenses. RC talked a little bit about that Rams front. Aaron Donald, obviously, Tom Brady hates interior pressure. The Rams' pass defense has been incredible at defending deep balls. But on the other side of the football, Jared Goff struggles against the blitz. And, oh, here comes Todd Bowles' defense down, the best blitzing defense this side of Pittsburgh. To me, this really just comes down to which of these quarterbacks can overcome their own kryptonite, because that's going to be the quarterback who wins the game.
Yeah, just over 3 hours until this one kicks off. And do you think, Dan, that this is an opportunity for the Bucs to say, you know what, without certainty, we are a consistent team in the NFL that has a chance to win a Super Bowl?
It needs to show up tonight, because it hasn't. We've seen glimpses. It hasn't, especially with what New Orleans is doing lately. I know Green Bay lost yesterday, but they looked really good. The Seahawks defense is starting to play a little bit better. Someone from the NFC is going to win. So I think that this now has to be the night where Tampa Bay goes, no, it's us. We're one of the best teams.
Could also be a statement game on the other side for the Rams as well. It's the fourth game in primetime for the Bucs this season. That's what happens when Tom Brady comes to town. That's their most since 2003. Let's get some game picks going here. Ryan, you go first. Who's winning this one?
I'm taking the Rams, and I'm taking the Rams because I believe this secondary shows up. I had a little talk with Jalen Ramsey over the weekend. He's excited about this matchup. He knows that Darius Williams is coming with him. He knows that JJ and Jay Fool will be back there in the safety positions, and he knows that he'll get pressure. I expect them to match up well, play well on the back end, and come home 24-20 with a win.
I respect it. I'm going to go flip it. Keep it relatively the same score, but I think the Bucs win this football game. It's time. I just talked about the run defense. No Andrew Whitworth at left tackle for the Rams. I want to see how that shows itself, but I think this Rams defense or this Bucs defense makes this Rams offense one-dimensional tonight.
You stole my point about Whitworth, man. Yeah, it's a great one. The Bucs blitzing defense is just scary, man. They bring pressure. The linebackers, Devin White, is a monster. I was thinking about switching to the Rams, but then I found out that RC can only wink with one eye. You can't trust a man that only wink with one eye, so I'm sticking with Tampa.
Wait, who can wink with both eyes, by the way? All right, really quickly, because I want to do this and then see if RC can wink with both eyes. I'm picking the Bucs because Tom Brady's going to have a big night in primetime. Put the camera back on Ryan Clark. Can you not wink with...
Try one eye.
Do it. I can only do one eye.
No, okay, no, that's Ryan. The left. Hey, oh, that's the left.
Try the other eye.
Now the right.
Get it. Ah.
I can't do it.
It's a double wink.
He can't do it.
Mina, you can wink with both eyes.
What? Yeah.
Whoa. One, it's like Wayne's World. Camera one, camera two.
You guys are
camera
crazy. One, all right, two. Enjoy Monday Night Football tonight. One, it's going to be a
Laura,
great
you
one.
Can't either.
Bucks and Rams, we're getting you ready for it right here on ESPN, leading right up to kickoff. We'll see you tomorrow on NFL Live.
Oh, wow.